TheDigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, Thursday, March 1st, 2007. Show with Orb Network. This is show number 97. Welcome to TheDigitalLifestyle.com, the new home of The Media Centre Show. I want to thank the guys from the podcast network for their support over the last 2 years. I thought the time was right for me to move the show and all the various content together onto one site, and the site is TheDigitalLifestyle.com. I want to try and increase the community element of the show and to bring together the show and the forums and the blogs to show how Windows Media Center fits in with the digital lifestyle and talk about Media Center and all its related technologies. So I'm going to be looking at other technologies that fit in with Media Center, such as Windows Home Server. And in fact, that's going to be the subject of today's interview. You may remember at CES, I talked with Todd Henrick, the product planner for Windows Home Server. Well, Todd is going to be joining me today to talk about Windows Home Server and some more of the features in detail. And I think it's going to be a great product for Windows Media Center enthusiasts and anybody with more than one machine at home. This is going to be an interesting product for you. So I'm not forgetting Media Center either. I'll have all the usual interviews. I've got an interview with Vidabox, MCE Tunes, Microsoft's Charlie Owen will be returning to the show to join me for show number 100. I'm going to have Media Center MVPs, developers, manufacturers. So all the guests that you've come to know through the previous shows, looking at other technologies related to Media Center as well. There's going to be lots of new blogs associated with the show. And the first one of those is going to be a developer blog, manned by Google developer Stephen Harding. Stephen's been on the show before. Stephen's going to be talking about the development side for Windows Media Center, Media Center Markup Language, all those kind of things. And Stephen started posting, so check out that link in the show note. And if you've got any interest in Media Center development, definitely have a look at that. Gary Whitaker, you remember Gary from previous shows as well, and he mans the Ask the Expert section on the forums, and he's going to be blogging on thedigitallifestyle.com as well, so check that one out. And we've also got a new gadget blog on the thedigitallifestyle.com as well, so check that out. That's going to be really interesting. That I'm looking forward to seeing what the guys come up with. All the links to the blogs are in the show notes, and in fact there's an OPML file with all the links in that you can subscribe to. There is a new RSS feed for the show on thedigitallifestyle.com, as well as RSS feeds for all the various blogs and the forums and everything. You can get just about anything through RSS. The Media Center Show Extra is going to transform into the Digital Lifestyle video show. We're going to be looking at Media Center related topics and other technologies as well. We're going to be featuring Home Server on that too, and products like WebGuide and all those kind of technologies, and that has its own RSS feed too. The forums are going to continue, and I've expanded out recently. There's forums for Home Server, forums for Media Center development, and gadget forums. Also for there's a lounge forum as well, so you can discuss anything you want down there. And as ever, I really do like getting your contributions to the show. So you can contact me now via the email ian@thedigitallifestyle.com, or you can go via the forums, you can post a comment on the blogs or on the podcast, and I'll catch up with those. I really do appreciate your comments, feedback, suggestions, and now's the time to let me know if you think, now relaunching the show, whether there's any change we should do, just let me know. Oh, on the podcast as well, obviously you're listening to the show now, but you can get the show via RSS, direct download, there's a flash player, and you can get it delivered via email. So there's plenty of ways to get the show out on iTunes as well. So the digitallifestyle.com is about bringing the community together for the Media Centre Show listeners, forum posters, and blog readers. And to celebrate the new home of the show, I actually got a bumper giveaway. Vidabox has given us a fantastic wireless keyboard. That you can follow the link in the show notes, you can have a look at that one. It's a nice prize that they're going to be giving away. One Voice are going to give away a copy of Media Centre Communicator, which is a really nice product, and as you know, I'm a fan of. Embedded Automation are giving us a copy of M-Control, home automation software. And Nivius are giving away Media Centre Companion software for a pocket PC. So this, you can use your pocket PC as a companion to Media Centre. Really nice piece of software. Plus, of course, we've got MC Phone and the Pamela Skype Digital Assistant giveaway as well. So there's a whole bunch of stuff to give away. And I've got to be fairly random at this. And any contribution to the show, be it by a comment, an email, or a forum posting, you're going to get a chance. I'm just going to pick those out at random. And I'll let you know next week who has won what. There's a couple other items I wanted to mention before I go to the interview. This is a comment from regarding show 95, where we were talking about European standards for TV in Media Centre. This is from Kenneth. He says, "Hi Ian, as a long time European listener, I've got to say that this show was probably your best. Great to hear that Microsoft is finally putting some serious effort into DVB-X standard. However, it was sad to learn that DVB-C won't be supported anytime soon. However, now that I've got that information, I can act accordingly. This is probably one of the biggest problems with the Media Centre team. You don't really know what standard they're going to support until release, which is very frustrating. But this podcast really shed some light on that, at least for the next update, which will probably be at the end of 2007 with Vista Service Pack 1. Now I'll have a look at the Fire DTV solution for DVB-C, and he sent me a link for that, which I'll include in the show note. But thanks for the great podcast, and keep up the good work." Thanks, Kenneth. Thanks for that email. It was good talking about the European standard for television when, you know, we've been talking cable card and other things for quite a while now. It is a shame that DVB-C won't be implemented straight away, but like you said, there is some other solutions, and the Fire DTV solution is definitely worth checking out if you're interested in DVB-C. I should also point out a slight correction really on what was said on that show when we were talking about DVB and not having high def content. Braden J in the forums actually posted that this is not true, that in Australia they do have HD over DVB-T, and that's 720p and 1080i. And I think I had talked about on the show quite a while ago, but it sort of slipped out of my mind. You can get HD over the digital signals, so that is possible with DVB-T in the UK. And in fact, as Nigel pointed out on the thread, the BBC are going to be performing some trials of HD over DVB-T, and in fact, trials are going on in London now. So it does mean that we could potentially see HD delivered directly over our into Media Centre. But as Nigel pointed out, the Australian broadcasters went for quality over quantity, whereas in the UK we tended to go for quantity over quality. And obviously the HD channels take more bandwidth, so you can get less channels over the air. But like Nigel, I'd like to see more high quality HD signals and less of the sort of home shopping channels that we get at the moment. And talking to the threads and the forums, the forum poster of the week goes to Slig. He wins a copy of MCE Phone, the Media Centre Skype user interface, and Pamela, the digital assistant for Skype. As I mentioned before, we'll be giving that away again, and you can check out Slig's posts in the forums. A couple of other items to mention before we get to the interview. Chris Lanier has a couple of nice posts, and one was on Sideshow. Great Media Centre extender. If you've seen or heard of Sideshow, but we did see him at CES, and I think you can see those on one of the Media Centre Show extras. The Sideshow's remotes that Chris is talking about are remote controls with the colour LCD display on there that will talk to your PC, and you can interact with it. So you can queue up music, you can browse guide data, that kind of thing, all through the remote. So, for example, if you want to see what's coming on next, you don't have to mess about with your TV interfere with what anybody's watching. You can just see that through the remote control. And they're really nice, and he's got some nice pictures of RecoVision Sideshow remotes. And I hope to see some of those soon, and we'll hopefully talk about those on the show in the future. Chris also has a nice post on touchscreen extender concepts, and I think, like everybody, Chris really wishes that the Media Center, the V2 Media Center extenders were out there now, and there's still no sign of them, really. There's been a few blog posts about them, but there's nothing concrete yet. And he's got some nice mock-ups of what the sort of wall-mounted touchscreen-type extenders could look like. And I'm really keen to see those going. I'm quite happy with my 360, but I know a lot of people would like a sort of a slim silent box to do that with. Right, so I'm going to take a message from One Voice and an updated message, and I'll be back. Todd Hedrick.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on OneVoice's Media Center Communicator, MCEach Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. OneVoice offers licenses for MCE Speech Tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Todd, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ian. Good to be back.
And I'm really excited to talk to you today to talk about Windows Home Server, as some more details have come out since we talked at CES. And so before we dive into the interview, just in case anybody didn't hear the show recorded at CES, could you give us your background on what you're doing, what you're involved with the project?
Yeah, I'm the product planner at Microsoft working on the Windows Home Server product, and I've been working closely with the product team that's building it. The role of a product planner at Microsoft has a couple of jobs or sub-jobs, if you want. One is doing a lot of customer research and making sure that we're developing a product for the marketplace and for a set of customers. And second is working with the community and helping out with the forums and the blogs and talking to analysts and press and everybody to spread the word, usually from a more technical level, but also from a product overview.
And this must be a slightly different project than a lot of those Microsoft projects that have been going on recently. It's almost reminiscence of the Media Center project in the fact that it's a new product that you're launching and that there's a lot of interest from enthusiasts and who will sort of be perhaps the early adopters, and then you're looking further down the line that the consumers that are going to want to install this as well, that that don't know about it yet, but initially it's the enthusiasts that are going to pick up on this kind of thing.
Yeah, when we started doing the customer research and kind of segmenting the market a couple of years ago and looking at how big the market was, where we kind of focused on was households that already have a broadband connection, households that have two or more PCs, and those PCs are already networked. So we're not trying to solve the problems or educating people how to network their homes. We're actually trying to solve the problems of people that have networked their homes and now have two or more PCs. And while we know the enthusiasts will be early adopters, we've actually tried to build the product so it's very approachable from the target in the segment of the market, which at Microsoft we call the enthused follower, which is the person that the enthusiasts tell this is a really cool product, and you should go check it out and go buy it because I love it. So while the UI and some of the capabilities are very I think some of the enthusiasts that have seen the product have say, wow, it's very simple and I don't know if I could use that. When they dig under the covers and realize what the product's doing, they get kind of excited about it. Since we announced Beta 2, we opened up a survey on connect.microsoft.com/Windows Home Server, and Windows Home Server is all one word, And you can go there and fill out the short survey and register your interest in participating in the Beta 2, and anybody can do so. And we posted a blog last night that, you know, we've already had over 20,000 people register in the past 48 hours from 111 different countries, and the interest continues to grow. And hopefully by early next week, or maybe even over the weekend, we'll actually release the beta to out to quite a few of those people who have registered.
Yeah, I mean, I've been using the beta, and what I've been impressed with is really is the backup part of the program. You know, how simple it is, and how you know, my real job IT is an IT manager, and I wish the you know, the backup solutions that I had on the office network worked as well as this. So before we go into that, though, perhaps we would just go over the areas that Windows Home, you know, main features that Windows Home Server is going to have. I mean, the backups is the one key thing, but there's other areas as well.
Yeah, so, yeah, from the features, and, you know, along with the Connect site, there's a blog, and you reference our blog from your site, Ian, which is great. And we also open up some public forums on Microsoft at forums.microsoft.com/Windows Home Server. And the core features are, you know, automated backup of multiple PCs. So every night we do a full image-based backup of all of your Vista or Windows XP machines connected to your home network. We provide remote access capability, so you can remotely connect into your home server. And from your home server, then you can actually remotely connect into your home PCs via remote desktop. And then the third big thing is centralized expandable storage. So using a new technology, Windows Home Server Drive Extender, you can easily add either internal hard drives or external hard drives to grow the available storage space on your home server without drive letters. So it just looks as one big aggregate pool. And then we really ask the users of the product to manage their data at the shared folder level. So we ship with some predefined shared folders, and you can create any number of shared folders you want. And then once you have two or more hard drives in a home server, you can turn on a feature of Drive Extender called folder duplication. And folder duplication allows for that shared folder to actually have two copies of it, and the two copies are stored on different hard drives, and the home server takes care of all that for you automatically.
I mean, yeah, it's a great feature set. So let's dive into the backup first. Like I was saying before, this is a technology that I'm sure must be coming, you know, at a corporate level, but it just works so simply that the connector gets installed, it does the backup for the first time, and then it's automated, and you know, and then you can then crack open those backups. So just tell us a bit about how the backup functions work.
So when we started looking at, you know, when we did the research early on, you know, 2 years ago, everyone, you know, said they kind of had this backup guilt. They knew they should be doing backup because now they have digital photos and these other things, these irreplaceable, you know, family memories and things like this. So we looked at it and we said, if we can't automate it, then, you know, if you still make a manual process, you know, human nature is not to do anything that, you know, takes time. You know, you got to figure out how to automate it as much as possible. So we looked at also solving the problem one household at a time rather than one PC at a time, because if you look at existing backup technologies, basically you have to go around PC to PC to PC and schedule it or do something, rather than, you know, if you put a smart device such as a home server in your house, you know, how can it basically, you know, take care of the backup for all your machines, and we'll support up to 10 machines for installing that piece of software, the Windows Home Server connector on. And then once you install that piece of software, it's pretty intelligent the way it works. We actually look at the hard drives, you know, if there's more than one hard drive, it will actually back up all of them. And we exclude certain folders automatically that we know, you know, like the page file and certain files and folders and the temporary internet cache that we know we don't need to back up. And then we actually do an analysis of those disks at the cluster level of the hard drive, which is technically, you know, if you look at a hard drive, it's just a collection of Lego blocks, and a cluster is one of those Lego blocks. And then we back up only the unique clusters across, you know, your entire home network once on the home server.
I think, and that's what's really the clever part about it, because I've you know, like you said, I've had backup guilt in the past, and I've tried different solutions, and I've got, you know, I've done maybe Windows backup on one machine, and I've done copying map drives on other machines, and they take up loads of space, and, you know, you never get around to doing it, and then when you need something, you haven't backed it up for ages. But this seems to all sort of pull together, and it seems pretty seamless. In fact, that, you know, my main machine, which has got loads of recorded TV and things on it, the first backup took quite a while, but from then on it seemed to be really quick. So there's some kind of technology there looking at, you know, what's changed rather than just doing a whole image each time.
Yeah, it's actually, it's what's changed across multiple PCs. So, you know, an example is that, and, you know, I've actually seen people say, you know, this guy, Todd Hedrick, doesn't really know what he's talking about. How can you have that much compression? But the first PC we back up, yes, it does take a little time because everything is unique to the home server that, you know, the first time through. But once you back up the second machine in your house, we already have the, you know, the Lego blocks that make up the Windows operating system. And, you know, if you have the same application stored on two PCs, we already have that information stored on the home server. And the home server doesn't have to store it twice. It just makes note of which PC had that data at which date and time. The other thing to add is backup is only as good as restore. You know, backup isn't the interesting part. Really, the restore is the interesting part. And how do you do a full image-based restore of a machine by answering as few questions as possible is something that we've also focused on.
That was one of the things that impressed me with the backup is the other night I just wanted I deleted, you know, sort of recorded TV file, and the kids wanted it back, and you know, in the past it was, you know, tough, it's gone, but I actually managed to, you know, to open up the restore, and it's just a simple sort of browser, isn't it? It's like a file structure. You can just go back through the backup, find the file, restore it, and away you go. So it's not just the image backup, you know, the whole disaster recovery type thing, but it's also getting back a single photo or a single MP3 file or whatever that's important to you at the time.
Yeah, because there's basically two things that happen. You know, someone's hard drive will die, or, you know, someone messes up a machine to the place it's really hard to repair it, and that's where the full image-based restore capabilities, you know, come into place. And The other thing is that, you know, you may just delete a few files, or you may do that, you know, as we call it, the big whoops. You meant to do a save as, you know, you open up a PowerPoint presentation and you delete, you know, 20 slides because you want to use the template, and then you do a file save and you just deleted your PowerPoint presentation. So recovering single files is, you know, we basically open up one of those backups across your home network, and we create a virtual view into what that hard drive looked like at that date and time, so that it's just a Windows Explorer window, but actually, you know, all those files are stored on the home server, and then you just drag and drop them out of this read-only Windows Explorer window back onto your desktop.
And does that then work across multiple machines? So, say, could I, from my tablet PC, restore a photo that was backed up on my Vista?
Yeah, it works across multiple PCs. I've done that exact scenario. And the other interesting thing is, you know, sometimes you have an old PC and you want to do a backup of it, but then you may, you know, give that PC to a family member, or, you know, you may actually donate it to charity, but you can actually make an image, you know, backup of a machine and go back, you know, 2 years from now, you go back and look at what that machine's hard drive looked like.
Yeah, so before you sort of decommission a PC or whatever, you've just got it there on your home server just in case.
Yeah.
I mean, that's interesting. Actually, I used it for that exact thing. My main media center PC, I upgraded from XP to Vista, and as it's my main machine, you know, for the Wi-Fi acceptance factor and all that, I wanted to make sure that, you know, that this thing would, you know, would be okay, and so I did a full backup with XP, and then install a clean install of Vista, and I know that if I ever need to get back to any of those files, I'm confident that they're on the.
Yeah, I mean, the thing we love about our beta testers are the ones that are brave enough to actually, you know, usually it's a spare machine that they don't care a lot about, but they actually, you know, wipe out the whole machine and then actually try and do a full image based restore. You know, if for the people that get in the beta, we love you if you, you know, bang on that technology as much as possible and give us feedback about how we can make it easier, and, you know, if you find any, you know, issues with it.
Yeah, that was the next question, actually. There's one thing I haven't tried is the image-based restore. So how does that work? I've got my machine there. The hard disk is gone, so I get a new hard disk. How do I get it back up and running again?
So there's, with the Windows Home Server, as part of the Beta 2 program, there's a DVD for installing the home server, and then there's two CDs. One is the Windows Home Server Connector CD, which allows you to basically configure each of your home PCs through a very simple wizard to, you know, have automated backup and report their health to your home server. And then the second CD is called the Home Computer Restore CD. And on that CD is a little Windows pre-installation environment boot, and it boots up, and it will go find your home server across the network, and then it will run the Home Computer Restore wizard, which asks you a couple of simple questions. What's the password for your home server? What date and time, which backup do you want to choose to restore from? And then if there's actually multiple hard drives that made up that backup set, it will give you the opportunity to, you know, map the C drive to the C drive and then D drive to the D drive, or you could just restore the D drive if something happened to the, you know, the secondary hard drive. The other thing you know, about it is that it will just, you know, then recreate what that hard drive looked like from the data, from the backup stored on the home server across your home network, and then it will just ask you to reboot, you know, at the end of that process, and it should, you know, it will reboot back, and it whether it's Windows XP or Windows Vista, it will be back installed as if, you know, on that date and time.
And yeah, and that just for the peace of mind to be able to do that, it's just this is what I was saying earlier about, you know, on a corporate network, you know, for me to do something like that, there is a selection of tools available, but this is such a neat way that you know, I wish that I kind of had that functionality, you know, easily available with this kind of device.
Yeah, the neat thing about the Windows Home Server, you know, product team is that, you know, when you work on a new product at Microsoft, it doesn't happen all very often, and sometimes you get some of the best and brightest developers to come, you know, to solve these challenging problems. And when you define the space of, you know, we're trying to solve it, you know, one household at a time and for broadband connected households, you define the variables of the environment that you're trying to build a solution for. And we know that we're going to, you know, back up and provide support up to 10 PCs in a house for this backup. You can do some pretty interesting things from a technology perspective, where if you think about, you know, trying to do it, you know, 1,000 PCs at a, or 2,000 PCs at a time, you want a different solution.
Yeah, so it's, because you focus so much on a specific market or a specific area, that you can incorporate those features without worrying about, you know, the vast scenarios of, like you said, 10,000 PCs trying to back up on a single server.
Yeah, we're experimenting with the technology to see where it can scale to. You know, we don't necessarily, you know, have an upper limit, but for, you know, for our product perspectives, our goal was always 10 machines.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the centralized storage now, which I guess is really one of the prime areas. So is this feature really the solution to the problem where, you know, you've got X files on one machine, you've got X files on the other machine, and you've got your pictures over here, and you know, none of the machines can find each other's pictures, and you can, you know, you have trouble locating these things. Is the idea now is that you put all this stuff on that centralized storage, and then all the machines can see the data?
Yeah, that's the idea, from not only within the house, but also from outside of the house, because in the customer research, you know, there's a group of users, and there's actually in the United States and in the UK, there's quite a few people that actually run businesses out of their home. And those people, you know, want remote access to their files a lot more than just, you know, plain old consumers do. And the ability to, you know, for example, when I rip a CD now through Windows Media Player into, you know, a lossless format or an MP3 format, I actually store it up on my home server so I can get at to that music from, you know, the three PCs in my house, or from the Xbox that's attached to the TV, or to the little Roku sound bridge that I hooked up to an old stereo set of speakers in the kitchen for my wife.
Yeah, but that's exactly that. The scenarios I was thinking that you've got sound bridges and you've got Xbox and all the different PCs. So all your files you would store on there, and then all the machines
right.
have access.
You know,
to those.
It's in beta 2. You'll see this in the remote access UI, and that we've actually taken Windows Desktop Search, and this is actually what I did at the Consumer Electronics Show. I had ripped a new CD that my brother gave me for the holidays, and I stored it up on my home server, but I forgot to copy it to my laptop before I went to the Consumer Electronics Show. I got an internet connection. I connected into my home server. I actually went to the music folder. Instead of browsing through it, I just searched on Jack Johnson, and it found the new Jack Johnson folder. I clicked on it and said download, and it zipped up all of the songs from that CD into one file, and I downloaded it to my laptop in the PR tent, and I, you know, had the music playing a couple minutes later.
Yeah, that's a really nice feature, because that's always the thing, isn't it? You know, you're out on the road, and there's always something that you forgot, you know, a picture or a PowerPoint presentation or whatever. So to have access to those files when you know your machine's hooked up via the broadband anyway is a really useful feature, because it's always happening to me, and you know, I'm out and about. Even if I just want to, you know, you want to show something off, you're at someone's house, you can dive into your machine and
file. I used to carry a USB stick, you know, home with a PowerPoint presentation on it, work on it, and then forget to bring it back into work. You know, now I just, store it and have access to it where I want to use it. And it's really, really handy, as you said. I mean, it's a, 30-minute drive round trip, you know, from work to home for me. And, you know, it may take a little bit of time over my broadband connection, and depending on people's broadband speeds, you know, into their home, but it's a lot faster than driving home.
And a lot of time, if you're going for a PowerPoint presentation, you know, you're not bringing back a whole DVD images over, so it worked really well.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the other things that I liked about was the remote desktoping. Can you explain what you can do with that?
So, yeah, one of the big differentiators with Windows Home Server, we looked at the other products out there, and, you know, there was people that were, you know, trying to provide remote access to kind of, you know, one PC at a time, and kind of a mantra for this product is, how do we solve the problem one household at a time? And so we've been working with the Windows Live domains team, and, you know, this isn't a feature of Beta 2, but it's something you'll see coming of that will give away a personalized address, you know, internet address to your home server, so you could get, you know, like, you know, Windows Home Server or Ian Dixon, .homeserver.com, and that use that address to remotely connect into your home server. You then would log into your home server, and you're presented with a very simple kind of tab-based UI for accessing the shared folders that user has been provided access to, the music folder, the photos folder, and you can give users read-write or read-only access or no access to certain folders. But you can also remotely connect into the PCs in your household that support the remote desktop protocol, so Windows XP Professional, Vista Ultimate, Vista, and the Vista Business SKUs, and Windows XP Media Center Edition and Windows XP Tablet Edition, such that you can, through the home server, you're basically connecting, you know, from the home server to that PC, but it appears to the user as if you're sitting right in front of the desktop of that PC. Although you won't, you know, see the background image, we kind of throttle certain things so the experience is good over that, you know, broadband connection.
Well, what I liked about this feature was that I've set that up in the past on my router by setting up, you know, forwarding rules or whatever, so that when I remote desktop in, it forwards me onto the right server. But if I've got more than one device, you know, that didn't work very well because I was always stuck to the one that I'd nominated on the router. But this way, you can come into your home server and then you can pick any of the devices on your home network.
And again, as we said, you kind of solving it one household at a time. You know, we know that we're targeting multi-PC households, and one thing is, you know, maybe you don't want to leave a PC on to, you know, you just want to leave your home server on to get access to your content. But if you do need to run an application remotely, you know, as some applications such as accounting applications, getting access to the files that make up, you know, your information about, you know, your accounting doesn't do you any good. You actually need to run the application to get at the data.
And one of the other interesting things that I saw with this is because the product itself is expandable, isn't it? You know, you're using Microsoft technology, and the fact you've got a home server sat on your network with broadband connection, does that mean then that you can use the Microsoft development technologies to then add on to that if, you know, as an enthusiast developer or as a professional developer wanted to sort of add, you know, create some extra services for a product like home?
Yeah, there's we're actually working on an ISV toolkit, and you'll hear more about it in the coming month or so. But, you know, it's basically, you know, Windows Server technologies under the covers with, you know, some pretty cool software we've added onto it and, you know, a few cool things from Windows XP Media Center Edition and some technologies from the Windows Live team, too. But it's basically Windows Server technologies under the covers, and You can, you know, build a service that runs on Windows Server, or you can, you know, actually write an application that runs on a Windows client that knows about a Windows Home Server and stores information in the shared folders and does things like that. You'll hear more about that. We'll basically share the toolkit. I think it's going to be sometime in the March timeframe, and you know, we'll start. You know, we're starting an ISV program to, you know, work with, you know, software developers and hardware developers and, you know, people that have some ideas for some very simple applications, such as a, you know, a web camera hooked up to their one of their PCs that is storing photos in, you know, and pictures, you know, from the outside of their house onto their home server, and then building a, you know, a website to share that, to, you know, really complicated things that people are looking at of maybe, you know, putting voice over IP technologies into the box itself.
Yeah, and I suppose you could have things like home automation running in, like you said, using the remote desktop. You can trigger things on that, so you could have your security cameras set up and you can look at them and all that kind of. I suppose it's endless what you can do with it.
It is pretty wild. What I mean, it's basically, I mean, if you look at it, you know, the way we've always looked at a home server is it's kind of an always-on, you know, device, you know, always available smart device on your home network that you have, you know, good connectivity to from both inside and outside your home. And it's a platform for people to build, like you said, home automation, home security, you know, telephony, you know, other communications like, you know, fax or something like that. I mean, there's a lot of things people could use this device and extend it with.
And one of the comments I got from the forums, someone said that support for the third-party services run on the box is amazing. I can't believe they're opening the platform like that. Kudos to the whole team. So it seems to get the thumbs up from the enthusiasts, anyway, that you're opening up the development side of it.
Yeah, the whole idea of the home server is, you know, is how do you make this kind of smart device, but also, you know, with the beta program and, you know, with all these people that are interested, I mean, they're installing it. They're installing it very much the way, you know, OEMs will install it, in the sense that, you know, the hardware partners will install it, that they plug a monitor in, they plug a keyboard in, they plug a mouse in to load the software. But we really, as the products will come to market, you know, from our hardware partners, you'll see that the home servers won't even have a monitor port on the device. And you'll manage and set up and configure your home server from one of the PCs in your house by using the Windows Home Server console application. So part of the toolkit will be, you know, how do I add a tab, you know, to the home server console application, so, you know, I can control my home automation and my light switches through that, you know, simple to use.
Right, interface. I see, yeah, because you've got to think of it as the paradigm. You've not necessarily got to use a monitor and a keyboard on it, and you're going through the home server console.
Yeah. So, you know, for product, I mean, I think that's the thing that developers kind of need to think about is, you know, how to rewrite their UI and how to simplify their UI where they're making choices for the user as we have. As we've developed this product, it's really easy to provide lots of knobs and buttons, but, you know, try and make a stereo where you can, you know, only turn on the volume up and down, and all the radio stations are automatically preset to all the, and automatically display that this is the opera channel in a digital display, where you don't have to set those stations yourself.
Yeah, I suppose it's very similar to how with developing Windows Media Center applications, you've got to think about the user interface. You can't just stack buttons and tabs and things. You've got to do it thinking how the user can interact through remote. And I suppose the same thing, you've got to think about how the user's going to come in through the console and how it's a sort of task-based console rather than just, you know, buttons and settings.
Right, and that's for software that's going to be, you know, kind of built on top of the home server. There's a whole class of software that you can actually build on top of a Windows PC or any, you know, sort of device in the house that has knowledge of the home server and is just using it kind of as a storage extension. For example, yeah. there's a great tool that ships for in Windows machines today that's available for free on Microsoft.com called SyncToy. And SyncToy does, you know, basically a synchronization between the shared folders on a Windows home server and, folders on one or more Windows machines in your house. But you run it from a Windows machine and it, you know, so you can keep your music and photos always in sync with what's stored on the home server with a laptop, say, that you travel with.
So not only have you got the sort of console-based applications, but you've got other applications that just use it as an always-on storage device.
Yeah, I mean, at my house, for example, I actually have a USB webcam, and I just have it pointed outside of my house, and it takes a picture every minute. of what's going on outside of my house, and I'm going to hopefully upgrade it to a motion, you know, sensitive one, so it will detect motion, and then it will do actually real video, you know, until the motion stops of what's going on. And then, you know, I'm storing all that stuff on my home server, and eventually I'll find the time to, you know, build a little web app that will show those photos to my friends and family, you know, through my home server.
Yeah, see. But one of the other interesting features that I saw really was the network health indicator. Now, this seems a really good way of a good point to in the program to put it, but it's something that I've not seen before. But you know, basically it's kind of all constantly reporting on the health of your network, whether if there's any issues, like you haven't got antivirus installed or you haven't done a backup, or that's an interesting idea. Do you think that's something that's going to be sort of expanded on, that not only is it working as a storage device, but this system is kind of monitoring the health of your whole network?
Yeah, so the customer research kind of pointed at that, and, you know, in multi-PC households is, you know, how do I kind of centrally monitor that things are, you know, healthy? And so what we've done in Windows Home Server is that we basically look at the security center status of a given, you know, of a, you know, your Windows Vista PCs, and for your Windows XP and Windows Vista PCs, we look at the backup status, you know, making sure that, you know, these backups are running every night. Because we know that not everyone leaves their PCs on every night. We know some people do, and, you know, some people leave some of them on. But basically, we just want to remind people that, you know, that backup hasn't run. And then with Windows Vista, we can centrally report the health center status, you know, the security center status of all your Windows Vista machines. Such that, you know, if there's a machine you don't look at very often, then maybe it's the machine that someone else in your household uses and it's in a different room, you would actually get alerted that, you know, this machine is, you know, has, you know, the firewall has been turned off, or, you know, Windows updates aren't up to date or something like that that's reported to you.
Yeah, I mean, that I found that really handy. I mean, for, you know, you have you know, like you said, a PC on the network, you know, a teenage son or daughter or whatever, and they've turned the firewall off for whatever reason, that's, you know, putting your network at risk, and you get alerted to that. So I thought that was a really good feature.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the other thing is, like, one of my laptops in my home, it's a wireless laptop. I never, you know, plug it in to my home network, you know, through a cable. And when I did my backups of my home server, for example, I backed up my, you know, wired desktop, the one that's, you know, attached via Ethernet cable first, but then I back up this wireless one second. And since most of the data is, you know, fairly common across PCs, it, you know, backup didn't take very long from this wireless machine to my home server. But every now and then, the wireless connection, because I just, you know, closed this machine down, the wireless connection between that machine and my home network goes down, and, you know, I just, you know, leave it in sleep mode, you know, every night, and the home server, it will wake up, it will back it up. But sometimes the wireless, it loses its connection to my wireless network, and I know it's not getting backed up because the home server will report that.
Yeah, it's a good way of working.
It's not that big of a deal that it's not getting backed up, in the sense, because I haven't used it. But, you know, it's nice that, you know, it backs it up automatically, even if it's in sleep mode. And then, you know, I can see if it's important. You know, like, you know, for example, if something happens, you know, I can easily go back to a previous point in time.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about was the folder duplication. This is. Could you explain what that is? I mean, it's a security thing, isn't it? But is it RAID? Is it not RAID? You know, what does it mean?
Okay, so we looked at RAID, and we actually we experimented with RAID for a good 6 months to a year of trying to automatically build, you know, RAID 1 and RAID 5 and all these complicated storage solutions depending on how many hard drives we found in, you know, a given home server. And then we worked with the Advanced Technology Lab at Microsoft that was working on this project, which was called Drive Extender. So we've taken the Drive Extender technologies from Microsoft's Advanced Technology Lab, and we're bringing them to market in Windows Home Server. And Drive Extender is different than RAID, but it provides all of the benefits of RAID, but it also does some things that RAID can't do very easily. So with Drive Extender, if you have at least two hard drives in your home server, you can select either all of your shared folders or just a subset of your shared folders to have what is called your folder duplication enabled. And folder duplication means that if you check it for a given shared folder, let's say your photo shared folder, that there will be two copies of that folder, one stored on one hard drive and a second stored on another hard drive. So if a single hard drive should fail, then you won't lose your photo shared folder. The other interesting advantage of the drive extender technology is you can add both internal and external hard drives to grow your pool of storage. Right now, my home server has 4 internal hard drives, and I have 7 external hard drives plugged into it for over 3 terabytes of storage space. I collect TV shows like some people used to collect stamps. The other neat thing is, it's as easy it is to add a hard drive into this, you know, drive extender pool of storage. It's really easy to remove an old, you know, smaller hard drive, and you just click on the hard drive you want to remove. You click the remove wizard, and it will let you know if there's enough space on the remaining, you know, storage in your home server, and it will actually take care of moving all the files off of that hard drive, and then let you know when you can physically remove it from the home server. Removing an external hard drive is, you know, very easy to physically remove. We've been working with our hardware partners such that you shouldn't have to power down a home server to remove a quote-unquote internal hard drive. And that, you know, internal hard drives, imagine that, you know, you really don't have to open the case to remove them. It's just, you know, as easy as kind of sliding it in and out.
Right. So, I see. So, if you've got an external device on there, USB drive, and you've got, you know, TV files on there, and you decide you need to take that drive out, you say you can kind of tell home server that it's not going to be connected anymore, and it'll move the data off there if there's enough room, so, and then tell you that it's safe to remove the disk.
Yeah, it's a slightly different model for external hard drives, in that, you know, I think it's the little bit of user education that if there's one thing, when you add an external hard drive to Windows Home Server, you're basically saying it's your hard drive, right? It's not something that you're going to add and remove multiple times. It's saying, you know, you're basically adding this hard drive to the available pool of storage. But if you do need to remove it for some reason, you know, like, it's really the only reason we suggest removing it is because it's an older, smaller hard drive, and you now have enough space on, you know, some of, you know, on your home server, you don't really need this hard drive anymore. You do want to, like, move data on and off of your home server, the way we recommend people doing that is by plugging that external hard drive into one of their PCs, and then, you know, dragging and dropping the folders out of the files and music and photos out of a shared folder on your home server onto that hard drive that's plugged into that PC.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, so that's the way you can do it through the sort of a removable drive. But if you've got the drive plugged into your home server, you basically tell the home server to take the disk offline, and it moves the data off.
Yeah, but, you know, kind of once you plug a disk in the home server, you know, it's home server's disk until you decide you really don't need it there anymore. It's not something you add and remove every day or every week. So for example, I actually, the tool I mentioned, SyncToy, that's available on Microsoft.com, I use that. I have a 500 gigabyte hard drive on one of my machines at home, and I use SyncToy to copy my shared folders across to that, such that every week I bring that into the office, so if something happens to my house, I actually have a backup of all the stuff that's an off-site backup of all the stuff that's important to me.
Right, yeah, I mean, that's you're going into sort of business continuity there almost, aren't you? But like you said, some of these things, like your photos and things, are irreplaceable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my wife considers the photos irreplaceable. I consider all those episodes of The Simpsons irreplaceable. So we have different things that are important to us, but, you know, I like the photos too.
I mean, when we're working with the drives, is the sort of the technical side of the drive sort of taken away from the user? So I was thinking, you know, if you've got a slower USB hard drive and you've got, you know, your TV files and you copy those onto home server, Does it think, well, that's a slower drive, I don't need to put, you know, I'll use an internal faster drive, or is this something that's hidden from the user and it just puts the storage away and you don't really know where it is?
It's hidden from the user. You know, that's one of the things that kind of drives the enthusiast crazy, is like, where is it? We've actually thought of building a little power toy that shows kind of a graphical heat map of where your data is, but I don't think that's something we'll build for the version 1 product. We, you know, the one thing we say is, you know, we're not going to support USB 1.1 drives as a storage extension, you know, mechanism for a home server, because, you know, 1.1 is about 40 times slower than USB 2.0. And it's just appalling of, you know, what happens to the performance. But an external FireWire drive or USB 2.0 drive, you know, is performant with internal drives. It depends on the speed of the internal drives, you know. But from a usage perspective, you really don't notice the difference.
And another question that I guess, you know, the thing going back to solving one house at a time or home at a time is user accounts. I mean, you can get into quite a mess if you've got multiple machines at the moment with user accounts. Does this centralize the user accounts, like almost like a domain, or is the user account still separate but you can somehow tie them together?
So it's the way we do it is in the Windows Home Server console, you can define up to you can define a set of users, and those user accounts on the home server are used for remote access. So when you connect in remotely, you enter the username and the password that you've given that user account, and you can select which users have remote access to the home server. So you can selectively, you know, only one user account, you know, can remotely connect in, or you can give multiple people in the house, you know, this capability. And then those user accounts, what we recommend in a home environment is that you use the same usernames that you've used on the PCs in your house. So, for example, I have a PC, you know, where I have two user accounts on it. One is Todd, and the second is you know, Mike. She has a user account on it. And then on the home server, we just recommend that you create the user accounts with those same user account names that are on your PC. So I have an account, you know, Todd, and then another one for my wife, Jennifer. And then you create the passwords, you know, in the same passwords. And once you create the user accounts the same, the passwords the same, Windows Home Server will actually help you keep them in sync, so that if someone changes a password on their PC, it will actually keep it in sync with the password for that user account you've defined on the home server. There's some code that is part of the Windows Home Server connector that allows you to basically just keep them in sync. And as long as they're, you know, the usernames and passwords are the same, then you can get access to the shared folders. You don't even have to log in to the home server once you connect in, you know, type in your password on your PC at home.
So what would, does that still sync then if you've got, you know, if you've got two Vista machines and your home server and you've got your user account on all three devices, if you change the password on one Vista machine, does that then sync all three devices together? Or is it just the home, the server?
No,
and the...
It doesn't sync. Go to that next Vista machine, it'll say, you know, your password between this Vista machine, you know, and your home server are out of sync. You know, which password do you consider to be the right one?
Right.
And then it will say, okay, the home server is the right one. You know, the password on the home server is the right one. Okay, then I'm going to update the password on this, you know, Vista machine to use that password.
Right. So it really does solve the issue with the user accounts then. So, because some people have talked about, you know, do we need an Active Directory and domains and things like that in the home? But with this, it's a lot simpler, and you don't really need to go to that level of complexity.
Well, and you know, there is a lot of complex stuff that you can use, you know, from a technology perspective, but again, it's trying to solve the problem, but also kind of meet the target market, you know, and there's a lot of machines that, you know, run Windows XP Home and other versions of Windows that don't support all these great technologies, such as, you know, Active Directory and Domain Join and all that wonderful stuff. So you would basically, you know, either you try and build it once to kind of meet the needs of all these machines, or you have to build different solutions for different, you know, machines, and that becomes really hard for consumers to understand of, you know, what's going on here.
And in terms of supported devices, you've mentioned obviously with Vista, you say Windows XP as well. Is there going to be support for other platforms?
So what machines you can load the Windows Home Server connector software on? It's Windows XP. Or Windows Vista machines. A machine, you know, an older Windows class machine or a Macintosh will be able to access the shared folders and content stored on a home server. And, you know, devices such as an Xbox 360 or a device that supports Windows Media Connect like a Roku SoundBridge can access the content, the music and photos and videos stored on a home server, if a user chooses to enable that feature.
One of the other questions that someone asked me was about roaming desktops, and Is that something that, that could be supported where, you know, because, you know, you've got your desktop on one Vista machine, you go to another one, is it, would it be possible to have your profiles kind of stored on the home server so that you get to see the same icons and the same place, the same backdrop and everything else?
So roaming desktop is an interesting solution. It's something that we didn't try to solve in the first version of this product. We've thought a lot about it and how to do it. And it's something we continue to investigate and look at.
And that's what we're sort of talking about, the sort of future things that you might be looking at. Network TV tuners, do you think that's ever something that that we could see in future products?
So where you put a TV tuner in the home server hardware itself?
Yeah, and then you can use them Media Center clients on the other machines to sort of talk to that.
You know, we're just kicking off the effort, you know, for kind of planning the next version and what's going on. We haven't even shipped the first version yet. We've heard that request multiple times, and, you know, with Windows Vista Home Premium, basically any PC in the house can have TV tuners and TV storage capabilities in it. Vista Home Premium is you know, kind of becoming the preferred OS that a lot of hardware partners are actually putting in their basic PCs, so that most consumers, with the addition of a very cheap TV tuner card, will be able to record TV on any PC, whether it be a, you know, a laptop or a desktop, and there's now TV tuners that run through a USB port. So whether it's the right thing to do for a home server, it's something we'll investigate in the future. You know, depending on, you know, cost, complexity, and, you know, we'll keep looking at it.
I mean, one thing is that I'm certainly going to be doing is storing all my recorded TV from the Vista machines onto the server anyway, so that all the different machines around the network can share that TV.
Yeah, I mean, I actually have, you know, the two machines that I can record TV on, and so both of those kind of archive their TV content onto my home server.
Looking at the sort of the hardware devices away from sort of beyond the beta, what kind of, you mentioned about the form factors, that you're going to be sort of boxes without displays and keyboards and mouse. So have you seen the hardware, what you're expecting these devices to look like?
We've seen some, and it's really up for the hardware partners to, you know, decide when they want to showcase and talk about the features and functionality. I mean, Hewlett Packard was demonstrating their MediaSmart server, and they've been a great partner to us, with us on the development of this product. But, you know, between now and when the, you know, software becomes available in the second half of this year and the hardware solutions, I think you'll see a lot of interesting form factors. The language we use is, you know, that, you know, it is a consumer product in that you basically want it to be kind of user serviceable without a screwdriver, so there's no tools needed to really add hard drives to it. You know, think of it, you know, you don't have to crack the case to, you know, increase your storage. And then, you know, different form factors, some people are looking at, you know, non-square or non-rectangular boxes as possible options for this, to make it more of a kind of an artsy statement rather than computer.
Yeah. I actually got a shuttle type box, you know, the small cube form factors to run home server on, and because it doesn't need to be particularly high spec, does it? And it runs really nice.
Yeah, I ran mine on a shuttle box for a while, and I definitely like those. One of the, you know, interesting partners at CES was Inventec, and they build the hardware that a lot of the hardware partners then put their logos on and bring to market. And they had boxes. It was funny reading some of the, you know, posts and stories after the Consumer Electronics Show. One, you know, all the a lot of the people, you know, the women that came into the PR tent said it looked like a flower vase with beautiful purple lights. And then I read this one blog post where some guy said it looked like a waste basket. Oh, I guess we're all entitled to our opinions, and I think that the neat thing is that, as you said, it doesn't require a lot from a system requirements perspective around memory, and you know, it's really, you know, how do you add more storage easily to this device, I think, is the thing we've been trying to work with our hardware partners on.
And sort of moving into sort of the time frames, what's the current sort of plan for sort of the general availability? We're looking later in the
Later in the year. I mean, the language, I mean, we're just saying second half right now. We're trying to, you know, just finalize up the software schedule and look at the localization. schedule of, you know, how we bring, you know, more than an English language version, you know, product to market. So we're, you know, looking at Spanish, French, German, and a Japanese version and editions in version one. And then when we can get those to market, and then, you know, when the hardware partners are basically, you know, can get the software and then get it, you know, into the retail channel.
It's and if anybody wants to get sort of more information, where's the place to go to find out more about Windows Home Server?
I think that, I mean, there's two places. One is, I would say, check out our blog. We try and, you know, do a post every day. So that's, you know, blogs.technet.com/homeserver. Home server is all one word. And then the other place, you could go to our forums and ask questions, and a lot of the people from the Windows Home Server team and MVPs are answering questions there about the product, and that's forums.microsoft.com/Windows Home Server, or you can just go to serverplayground.com. It's all one word, server playground, and that will take you to those same forums.
Well, it's a great product, and it's something that really does answer a lot of questions that I've been wanting to use, and the enthusiasts seem to be getting behind it as well. So I'm really looking forward to seeing more of the products as the details come on, and I think it's going to be a great project for the future. So many thanks for coming on the show to talk.
You're so welcome, and you know, I look forward to, you know, talking in the next month or so when we can hopefully, you know, maybe 6 to 8 weeks out of when we can hopefully share information about, you know, the developer toolkit, and you know, maybe as we get some, you know, more capabilities out that we can, you know, address, you know, like how, you know, the integration with Windows Live works in future calls.
Well, that'd be great. Yeah. So many thanks for that.
All right. Well, cheers.
Thanks for Todd. That's it for this week's show. I hope you'll be subscribing to the new feed for the show and visiting the new site. Please get in touch via ian@thedigitallifestyle.com, or just go over to thedigitallifestyle.com. You can comment on the blogs, you can send private messages, or you can post in the forums. I'll be back next week with another Media Center interview. I'm going to play out with the new show theme that I've recently recorded. I'll see you around on thedigitallifestyle.com. Thanks, bye.